Welcome to the EDUCAUSE 2009 Annual Conference Podcast. The EDUCAUSE 2009 Annual Conference brought together the most influential IT decision makers and resources to improve the ability of higher education to achieve its mission. This podcast is sponsored by Juniper Networks and Quest Communications International. You can find more podcasts like this by searching for EDUCAUSE on iTunes or visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Pat Shea. I'm from WICHE ICE. WICHE stands for the Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education, which is a compact of the 15 Western states that share resources and collaborate on solutions for higher education. And ICE stands for the Internet Course Exchange. But we're here today to talk about web accessibility, and WICHE and WICHE ICE are partners in the Goals Project, which Cindy Rowland is going to talk with you about. And Cindy is from the Center for the Center for Persons with Disabilities at Utah State University, and also with the Web AIM project there at Utah State, which originated out of another FIPSE-funded project. So she has lots of resources to share with you today. Just to get us started, I'm curious about how many people here are have different roles at your institutions or systems and offices. So if you'd raise your hand and let us know, are you in a CIO kind of position at your institution? How many are in that? How many are faculty members? Okay, how many are student services? Okay, so mostly student services, which is great.
And technologists.
And how many are just and technologists? Okay, that's our fault. So today what I'd like for you to do is, as Cindy makes this presentation, is to think about the kinds of problems that you have in making sure that the services that you provide over the web are web accessible. What we've learned in this project is that many times institutions have policies to really focus on web accessibility, but if you get a couple pages below their homepage, that accessibility starts to disappear. So think about the kinds of problems that you encounter, and then Cindy's going to talk about some tools that are being developed out of the Goals Project, and we'd like to know whether you think some of those tools will help you address the problems that you encounter, and then additional tools and services that you might need in this area. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Cindy, who will make the presentation.
Okay. Thanks, Pat. And I've asked Pat to keep me on a tight timeline. I'm hoping to just blitz through content in about 25, I don't know, you might give me a couple minutes if I lapse over. But we really want to talk with you guys about what your experiences are, what's happening with you. So if it sounds like I'm just on a express train, that's because I am, because I want to get to what may be the more important stuff, which is going to be just your own content. Oh, yes.
Do you have enough volume? Everybody
Can everyone hear me, or do I need to put the mic up? You're just so-so. Okay, here, I'll just do this. I hate these things, so I just didn't put it on. Now can you all hear me? Am I too loud? Okay. Okay, all righty. Okay, Pat, so start the clock. All right. Well, in our brief time today, there are just a few things that I wanted to do. I just wanted to quickly review the problem. I suspect that for most of you guys here, you're already fairly well-versed in accessibility. Let me find out how many would say they are more than at a beginner place in terms of what web accessibility is, what it means. So that's most of you, but I still don't want to like lose anyone in the dust. We aren't going to be talking about technical issues and specifications so much as system issues, but this is still important. I want to spend time, of course, talking about how the Goals Project is hoping to help institutions truly engage in enterprise-wide system change, and then let's get to talking.
All right. So here we go. And this is not new to any of you guys. We have a campus context right now where the web is being used more than it ever has before in our lifetimes. And guess what? It's just going to keep continuing as we all move into, mobile environments, as we move, as we move into more gaming immersive environments, as we move into even a more technology-rich world than we have now, accessibility to web content is going to be even more critical. We've got lots and lots of things that folks are doing, getting content. How many of you know your students are getting content on their cells, on their PDAs from campus? Yeah? It's everywhere. All right. Whoop. One more. Okay. So quickly, the problem is, for those of you that are unaware of what web accessibility is, web content, unless it's expressly designed to be accessible, may actually prohibit people with certain types of disabilities from gaining access. If you're an individual who's blind, you aren't going to be able to see non-text elements. So it's the developer's role to make sure that that's put there. But what about some of our more dynamic and interactive scripting and programming, some Ajax things, some things that are done in Flash? All of those can be accessible, but it takes care, it takes determination to make that happen. In the meantime, some people with disabilities, and we're not just talking about students here, we're talking about staff, we're talking about faculty, can be prohibited from getting into that content. So that's the problem in a nutshell. And here's the other part of the problem. We've known about this for over a decade, and the problem remains. I see some colleagues in the audience here. I know that many of us have worked since the mid-90s on web accessibility efforts. The Web Accessibility Initiative out of the W3C had the first draft of WCAG in 1996. Or that's the Web Content Accessibility Guideline. I apologize for my alphabet soup here. Just last year, our project did a quick little sampling of what's happening nationwide. We did a sample of a four-year and a community college from each state and the district. We looked at pages that were one level off the home. This is what we found. 97% of those pages would not pass Section 508 standard. This is very similar data to data that we had gotten in the late 90s as we made applications for initial federal grants. Now, I won't get into all the stats. I mean, maybe the sample wasn't large enough, maybe this, maybe that, but we got a problem. WebAIM's been at this for a very long time, and we're not seeing, I think because the web is bigger and the web is more complex, our samples are, more cumbersome, perhaps, is what I'm trying to say here. So we've got problems in education, that's for sure. So the need has never been greater. And we know that we've got, according to U.S. Census, about 8.5% of the general population. Well, it's like 19.8% of the general population, according to the census, have identified themselves as having a disability. That's 1 in 5. But of those, who are the people that are having problems getting on the web? Well, as you extrapolate down, it's about 8.5% of the population. That translates into millions of students, millions of faculty and staff members across our country. So how can we improve this picture? Well, in my thinking, we've got to get to the top of the food chain. We've got to get to true system change. And that is really what this project, the Goals Project, is about. Now, I'm just going to mention again that we've had a lot of information that's been widely available for a very long time. We've got standards that have been set by professional organizations, if you wanted to conform to the federal standard, you could. In 26 states, there are laws mandating access as well. So you might want to go to one of those standards. So there's a lot of information. There's a lot of free resources. There are just tons and tons of groups to go to for help, whether that's for pay or for free. And there are lots and lots of models and lots of campuses that have done good work looking at how to reform entire systems. But we are still left with some problems. And yet we've got motivations that really do exist in higher ed for this kind of change. The top ones really are economic, technologic, and legal. And I won't go, each one of those could warrant its own session. We've got right now motivations that would help CIOs to understand that accessibility is mission-related. We also did a scan of mission statements in higher ed, knowing that that's the call that folks are trying to respond to. And in those mission statements, they most often said things like all students, or valuing diversity, or preeminent outcomes. All of those kinds of things would be related to providing access and performance for students. There's also a huge motivation for folks in upper administration to look at that return on investment, not only just in terms of outcomes, but in terms of just pure efficiencies. If I develop something and now I have to, by law, retrofit it because someone with a disability is requesting access, that's an incredible inefficiency. If anything can be made natively accessible, it's going to be technology. You know, we would no more build a building and then say, you know what, we need people with disabilities to get in and our doorways aren't wide enough, so we're going to have to retrofit this entire building to push out all of the doorways 4 inches so that wheelchairs can fit through. We would never do that. We would never do that in part because you can't, because of the Americans with Disabilities Act, but engineers, contractors, architects understood that, and that started becoming part and parcel of requirements and standards. This is where we need to be going with accessibility. I'll also mention a couple other things here. Recruitment and retention. I don't know if any of you have paid much mind to how much it costs to recruit and retain staff and faculty and students. But if you're trying to get a diverse group in and you're not paying attention to access, you are wasting your money, at least in terms of that group, because they're going to look at sites, see that you're not friendly to their needs, and they're out of there. And then the last one I'm going to mention is the second from the last bullet. With President Obama signing the UN's Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, and that UN convention includes an accessibility section. Very soon, we're going to be seeing some changes. But for those institutions that are looking right now at how they might collaborate beyond our borders, the global issues, the global imperative for accessibility is becoming even more great. So what really is the problem? Well, what we are hearing consistently at WebAIM and at the National Center on Disability and Access to Education is that there really isn't a commitment to it. Now, is it awareness? Possibly. Is it knowledge of how to get stuff done? We're not seeing the problems, frankly, at the level of the technical folks. They know where to go to get the information. And if someone tells them to do it this way, they'll do it that way with some support. We're seeing a vacuum in leadership. We're seeing a vacuum in commitment. We're seeing a vacuum in how it is that resources and supports trickle down to faculty and to staff. That's what we're seeing. And we're seeing a lack of commitment to an ongoing process that improves over time. So one of the solutions, and this is what prompted us writing this grant into FIPSE that, yay, got funded, was to really start looking at how we could kind of up the ante and get information into those administrative channels. We wanted to really hit the process of self-study, in part because that is core, that is central to higher education. Regional accrediting entities, in fact, require that you demonstrate a process of continuous improvement as you go into cycles of reaffirmation for your regional accreditation. So this is all stuff that technically could count for that, and it seemed like a nice way to leverage that. And we also needed to figure out ways to improve leadership and commitment. So we got the goals thing funded, yippee. It's a consortium, and the consortium, along with the National Center on Disability and Access to Education and WebAIM, which are both at Utah State, we have WICHE for the Western states. We have the Southern Regional Education Board, and they represent 16 states in the South. And the Kentucky Council on Post-Secondary Education has been a preeminent partner with us as well. So that is the project. And our aims are pretty much, our products right now are threefold. We're going to be developing a series of action papers that are going to be, they'll go to different audiences. The one that we have right now is one ready to, well, just about rock and roll out to the, like, CIOs, administrative folks, something that you might want to give a provost. We have a set of, institutional indicators of best practice for enterprise-wide web accessibility, and then a web-based tool. We had been calling it an audit tool, but I guess folks in response to our development of that thought that was had a negative connotation. You're auditing us? Ooh. But it really is. It's a benchmarking tool. It's a planning tool. It's a tool, a web-based tool that folks can use to engage in self-study of the institution. You know, how are we doing as an institution, not just as the personal champion for web accessibility in my college, but for the whole entire system. So what I can tell you right now is that we do have the action paper ready for the higher level administrative folks. And I just wanted to mention, if anyone is ready or interested in this, we have that publication here. With one caveat, we did a limited run as a proof that went to our partners and whatnot. And we know that in this, we have, a couple typos and we have one header wrong and all that kind of stuff. But mostly, if anyone was interested in taking it just for their, personal reading, there's a stack here. Come up afterward. Just grab that puppy. I don't know that I would encourage you yet to give it to your provost, because the provost will notice the typo and or typos and the missing header and, things like that. But it's here. And it's also online. It's just... we tried to distill a lot of information into just some points, key points that are just going to be down and dirty and that'll resonate for someone at that level. We have spent a long time creating best practice indicators for enterprise-wide web accessibility. And actually, Pat, there are, well, no, you know what? Yeah, I think we could. You could pass those out. Pat's going to pass out just a little one-page sheet that kind of gives the skinny on it. Of course, it's all available online as well. But I'm going to give you a few examples of what in the heck we mean by that. This is pretty much what she's passing out. We have, this is an at-a-glance. Now, the actual document is large. But when you look at it, this, for those of you that have been involved in web accessibility, it's kind of a no-brainer. So the four things that would indicate that an institution is, in fact, engaged in system-wide web accessibility is first institutional commitment. And then we've got some benchmarks of what that means. Planning and implementation. And then we have some benchmarks as to what that means. That an institution has some resources and supports that are used and what that kind of means. And that there is an assessment piece that goes along with that. So not too controversial, and we've just finished a validation study on this as well, if not for this presentation, but if anyone is interested in seeing any of those data. I'm going to give you a couple examples because the last slide just had the indicators and the benchmarks, But we wanted to get down to what might be evidence that an institution is hitting, you know, said benchmark. So that's what a couple of these samples are. So right now, let's just pretend that you are in indicator one. You are in institutional vision and leadership. That's where you are. And we're just looking at the first benchmark, and that's the commitment. So what would be evidence that an institution is actually committed to web accessibility? Well, it might be things like there exists a statement of vision or commitment for it. And we've seen some institutions that have things like that. It may be that a web accessibility task force has been appointed by, you know, central administration. It's been created and it's maintained in an ongoing way. So not just a single person that's supposed to run around and rattle chains, but an actual group of key stakeholders that can help this get along. Maybe you have an existing policy. Well, certainly if you had an institution-wide policy, that's showing some kind of commitment. So you kind of see where we're going here. Here's another benchmark under that same indicator. Another benchmark is that you've got a lot of stakeholders that are part of the process. I'll tell you, there is nothing that rankles faculty members more than people that don't understand their lives and their role telling them what to do. You've got to have that voice at the table. There's nothing that rankles a technologist more than having someone else who doesn't understand their role and the reality of their lives telling them what to do. So you've really got to find prominent members across a lot of those key groups to be part of how those decisions are made, how the policy is shaped, how the implementation or the planning for the rollout is going to happen, all of that kind of stuff. And those people have to be respected within the groups that they're representing as well. But you can see that maybe a piece of evidence that you've got relevant stakeholder participation is that you've got faculty, staff, and students, I'm on the third bullet point here, that have responsibility for web accessibility in their purview. What that's telling me is that they understand when I'm in Blackboard, it's my responsibility to upload accessible PDFs, PowerPoints, and Word documents. That's my responsibility as a faculty member. You have staff members that understand that when they're creating documents, what their responsibility is. So things like that might be evidence that stakeholders have participated all the way along in this process. Here's one last example I'm going to use. This is on a different indicator. Indicator two on planning and implementation. One of the benchmarks is that you have a comprehensive accessibility policy. Well, so what do we mean by comprehensive? Well, it might be that you, or some evidence that it truly is comprehensive, might be that you've got, you know, normal policy stuff in there. You have effective dates. You have the scope of the policy. You've got the technical standard defined. You have exemptions clearly, well, that's not even on this particular slide, but you have exemptions to the policy well stated, well defined. You've got provisions for procurement, because I'll tell you, if your purchasing people aren't in on this, you are on a losing treadmill. You are not going to get yourself more than an inch and a half ahead. You know, consequences for non-conformance in the policy. So all of these things would lead credence to the fact that you do in fact have an enterprise-wide comprehensive policy. Okay, how am I doing so far? Okay, good. Alrighty. I want to show this web-based tool, and it is again. The intent, we won't call it an audit tool, the intent is for planning, the intent is for benchmarking and for self-study. What we did is we took all of the indicators and the benchmarks and the evidence, some of that you've got there, and we converted that into a series of questions. All right, so, good. And this, what we are doing, we'll be starting field testing of this with institutions in the coming week. By the way, if anyone thinks they might like to test this at their institution, let us know. The way that it works is that, let me just kind of go through. You know, an institution has opportunities to get a team together that will study this and pull down a profile. And the reason that's interesting is that once we have more information in our database, we're going to allow comparisons. You know, how are other 4 years that are research or doctoral extensive in the Carnegie classification, how are we matching to them? How are we doing with other land grants? How are we doing with other institutions in Colorado or, you know, whatever it happens to be? Obviously, you folks can review it as frequently as they want. A review cycle for some institutions may be yearly. It may be every 3 years. Who knows? But what happens is that the a team leader, kind of like an administrator for the self-study process, will identify a whole bunch of reviewers that'll be part of this self-study team. And then So what the reviewer, team leader does is first they go through, and you'll have to ignore this. This questions lets the team leader understand if the reviewers have actually reviewed the content, yes, and if there are items that need to be discussed. But so what the team leader would do is go through any of the indicators and, you know, mark some statements, okay? Add comments if they, let's say, oh, you know what, our library has this, but our institution doesn't. Oh, well, the head webmaster has a series of technical specifications, but it hasn't gone anywhere. So places to note, there's places to rate stuff, and then once it's all said and done, the team leader then has an opportunity to open it up for review. The reviewers go in and they're looking at what the team leader has marked to see if they agree or if there are other thoughts that they have on this. And that's when you get into kind of discussion and conversation, or the things we disagree on. And of course, people from different aspects of campus may have a very different opinion or a very different thought of how this all is all working. Once all is said and done, let's see, you know, on this particular one, for this particular indicator, this institution, which is just, you know, a bogus institution because we just made one up, is doing fair on their stuff. They can, however, as they get all the way through, go into then some action planning. So what happened in the action planning, let me get down here, is you view the report. You actually get to decide, as a group, you know what, we really only wanted to work on just a few things, so we're going to do that. Then as we get into creating our plan, the things that we've selected, so I had selected this actually this morning, will pop up with a whole bunch of resources that the teams may or may not find useful in what it is that they're, you know, about to prepare to do. But they may come up with, you know, an outcome statement. So in this one, we're going to, you know, ask the provost to convene a standing committee. That's an outcome, and I'm going to actually do it. So there we have that, and I'm going to try to do it by the end of this calendar. And other comments on this is that we really want to have the, it would be ideal if we had the committee convened before, you know, 2010. So we're going through things, we're you know, setting some outcomes for ourselves, and then we get moving, we get going. Then, of course, the next review cycle, we have an opportunity to look at how we did and look at the our progress on that stuff. So that is the tool. Like I said, there are opportunities if anyone is interested in doing any field testing to do that. Last couple slides. Anyone that is interested in system-wide accessibility, there's certainly some things that you can do now. Certainly at a micro level, you have to understand what your own accessibility is, what your points of influence are. You know, does your institution have a policy? Do you have training and resources for your faculty and staff? Are you hiring new technologists that have that knowledge? Is that part of the HR write-up on even what's a requirement or even a preferred element for hiring on some of this stuff? That should be happening. And what about at a macro level? You know, you've got to make sure that there really are enterprise-wide system-level efforts that are happening and that these are continuing over time so that you aren't person-specific in terms of your accessibility efforts, and as soon as that person leaves, you're kind of messed up. So I will hush now and... Okay. But you might need it. You might need this. I'll just...
Okay, well, you're going to stay there. Okay. Well, thanks, Cindy, for presenting this new tool that will come out in the Goals Project. But I ask you to think about some questions before we started. And the first one was, what kinds of problems do you encounter in trying to make sure that your web is accessible in all of its levels to students and staff with disabilities?
I don't know if you're specifically referring to academic freedom. And in as much as I don't usually challenge participants of sessions, I've not yet personally had an experience where someone's desire to have academic freedom, which is typically in a content mode, can't be done in a way that's accessible. It absolutely is. And, you know, what we're talking about here is a sea change in post-secondary ed. It's not going to happen overnight, and it has to be well thought out. You know, consider what might be the impact of making sure that accessible course elements could be part of faculty members' promotion and tenure files, what that effect might have. What effect it would have to make sure that every time your campus is teaching Word, PowerPoint, Flash, whatever, that you don't teach it and then teach the accessible stuff, that accessibility is native in the teaching and people don't even know that's not how you do it. There are lots and lots of things that I think are going to have to happen. A lot of motivators, some things that are compliance-driven. Personally, I'm not allowed to drive a university car without going through their motor pool training. I'm not allowed to sexually harass my employees, darn it, as much as I try. Now, that was a joke. No one laughed. But there are, and every time I go to hire someone, I have to sit through an equal opportunity thing. So we've got mechanisms at institutions that are requirements-based, and yet for something as legally volatile as accessibility, I'm surprised that institutions would rather kind of wait for the boom to hit, as it were. But you're absolutely right. The motivations, be they positive or negative, have to get out not just to faculty members but to staff. How many staff members create documents that then get put on the web? Lots. And we're not tackling that. We've got to tackle the tools. We've got to tackle the knowledge of the web developers, but we've got to tackle everything else as well. Yeah, actually, what I can tell you is that Goals started, and we got, and our initial funding was to help influence accrediting bodies. And I won't go into the politics of what happened during the higher ed, the reauthorization of the Higher Ed Act, but there was quite a spit and match between U.S. Department of Ed and the accreditors. So with permission from FIPSE, we backed off of that. We're still hoping that we'll be able to get the kind of blessing of the regional accreditors that using this kind of tool would count for them. But I agree. I mean, if I say, how do you get to the top of the food chain? In each state, it's going to be at the Board of Regents or the trustees and at regional accreditors. And I think until we can kind of get it to that level, we're all going to just be splashing around. I did have a comment, though, on the procurement stuff, because that's a very vexing soup to be in. When, and of course, no one would say if something is not accessible, then
well, and that there are no accessible alternatives, that you just, you know, can't get it. However, there are some wonderfully clever things that can, with negotiation with the vendors, be put into the contract that requires them to be working on accessibility at certain milestones and markers. So even if product X that you're, you know, drooling over isn't accessible, you really want it, working with your purchasing office and working with the vendor, you can help your institution. Frankly, you can help the vendor. And it's a win-win-win that, you know, over time they're making things more accessible and you still get to have it and know that it's going to get better. I'm showing my age here, but back in the day, it was relatively easy to make things accessible because we were just talking about HTML. Ultimately things are expressed that way anyway, but I think that as technology, web developers at the time didn't need that much sophistication to make stuff accessible, is I guess what I'm trying to say. That picture is changing. Now, if you are looking at some of the Web 2.0 kinds of things, if you don't really understand the core principles of accessibility, it's going to be tough if you're scripting Ajax, for example, to make sure that that's going to be fully, you know, perceivable, operable, understandable, robust. So I agree with what you're saying. However, I think what that may mean is we're now at a place where there's almost like the professionalization of technology people in general. I mean, how many folks just picked up HTML online as, you know, 10 years ago or something and could? It's not as easy to get quite up to speed on all the things that you need these days. I mean, I'm not talking about HTML, but, you know, the other kinds of things. So we may be seeing that, you know, kind of professionalization of that, and that may very well be including accessibility in it. How they shake out. Well, I'm just chomping at the bit to actually comment on both of them. First, in terms of 508, Section 508 always applied to only the federal government and those agencies. Now, folks have over time incorporated those technical standards that define what accessible information communication is, including the web. They've pulled them into state law. They've pulled them into institutional policy. But at a federal level, there's no compulsion for your institution to conform to that standard. However, there is a federal compulsion to comply with Section 504 out of the Rehab Act, which is, you know, the mainstay of anti-discrimination for disability in higher ed. And if you get $1 of federal monies, you must conform to Section 504. And now what that says is that you can't discriminate. Now, how it is that you choose not to discriminate is up to you. But the other piece is the Americans with Disabilities Act, which, you know, bars discrimination in employment and in some other contexts as well. So even if your institution does not need to adhere to Section 508, which is kind of the technical specification, you absolutely, beyond the shadow of a doubt, must conform to Section 504 of the Rehab Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act. So you're still caught in that same thing. And then the second thing, of course, I'm trying to remember, it was on resources? Yeah. Right. And, you know, we're seeing institutions do lots of different things. We're seeing some that say, you know what, you are as responsible for the content as you are when the disability resource folks come and tell you that because you have a student that is blind, you must, you know, you must describe what you're writing on the board. You know, it's your responsibility to do that. And likewise, it's your responsibility to add alternative text or to use actual headings in, you know, your Word documents. We're also seeing some that are taking the model that you just mentioned, which is, okay, we know this is kind of the Wild West here, so we're going to appoint kind of I'll call it an accessibility Nazi for each college or each unit. And before anything can get uploaded, it has to go through this person. And the interesting thing is, actually, faculty hate that even more, because now instead of putting things on the web 3 minutes before they go to class, they have to have it ready like 3 days before. And that makes them even crazier. So, but you, your point is well taken. We're going to have to look at how to get the job done. You know, we can't just say, well, I don't want to do it, you know, because this is a legal obligation.
Yeah.
You know, John, it's interesting because as you guys well know, accessible content is optimized within search engines because it tends to be more standards conformant. A lot of institutions are following the lead of a lot of businesses, which is they're pouring in, you know, this grundle of money to raise the profile on, you know, Google or Bing or whatever searches. You know, they're attaching $100,000 line items on search engine optimization when making content accessible might actually get them at about, you know, the same thing. So it's your point is well taken. Yes. Well, the witching hour has come.
I wonder if we could ask that one question, though, about...
The second question I ask is can you see how the tools that are in the Goals Project might be helpful to you in solving some of these problems? I know it may be difficult because you only saw a little snippet of it, but are there any thoughts about that or other kinds of products and services?
Or even just the notion of self-study as a way to kind of monitor institutional progress over time. Any other thoughts, comments? Okay. Thank you so much, and I do want to remind you, if anyone's interested in a nearly complete, with some imperfections, action paper, come and get them. Thank you so much.
This EDUCAUSE 2009 Annual Conference Podcast is sponsored by Juniper Networks and Quest Communications International. Thanks for listening.